WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you. Right now, whenever that happens to be. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effect your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. Today's show is one that I really believe can and will benefit every New Yorker who listens. At a time when we're all experiencing the United States of America as the divided states of America, I think the issues we'll be discussing today can actually go some way toward providing a much needed and much more rare pathway. Now, some issues are complicated, and reasonable people can have different opinions based upon different values, but when it comes to issues like environment, climate change, and clean energy, I contend that much of the division we're experiencing isn't from a difference in values. It's a result of a massive, well-funded misunderstanding. And I say this at a time when, as you know, it's getting more and more difficult to have in-depth conversations about meaningful issues. But when I've had the rare opportunity, and it's getting more and more rare, to drill down and really ask those who take an opposing stance on environmental issues what their opinions are based upon, I find that most often they believe what they do because they either don't know the information or perhaps were misinformed. Now, this might sound like I'm being arrogant, saying that they're the ones who are misinformed. I get that. But to explain, of course, I know that I don't know everything about everything. Nobody does. But I, like many of you, know a lot about certain topics. And when I talk about those topics with people who know very little to nothing about them, and I hear strong set opinions, for instance, like clean energy doesn't work or is less American, or that wind power is dangerous, that climate change is a hoax, while I never hear them talk about the toxic, deadly pollution that kills millions every year, the influence of misinformation becomes glaringly obvious and, again, divisive. I'm not talking about misunderstanding complex principles, but simply not understanding some of the basic facts relating to these issues or quoting or relying upon the words of less than credible sources. And I'm being kind there. So since we all want to have clean air, water, and safe soil, why are we not on the same page? You'd think we would be. Unfortunately, as I mentioned before, a lot of the doubt was bought and paid for. A multi-year 2024 joint investigation by the House Oversight and Senate Budget Committees revealed internal documents that demonstrated for the first time that fossil fuel companies have known that burning fossil fuels causes climate change, and they've known it for more than 60 years. Yet for decades, they worked to undermine public understanding and to deny the science that underlies climate change. And there is a lot of it. In 2015, when reporting by Inside Climate and the LA Times exposed that Big Oil knew the truth, ExxonMobil publicly accused reporters of journalistic malpractice. But behind closed doors, their own communications advisor admitted in an email that the company didn't actually dispute much of what these stories report. We only know this because we finally saw the internal emails we were never supposed to see. About a month ago, we received a request from New York Public Interest Research Group, NYPIRG, to sign a letter addressed to Governor Hochul and state leaders regarding our climate law. That's what we're going to discuss on this show. Now, I know that some of our listeners may want to tune out because we're going to be talking about the importance of and the path to sustainable clean energy, which I know many have been told doesn't work and is somehow inferior, less American than fossil fuels. But I'm going to ask you to do something very, very difficult. Suspend your doubts for a moment. Leave your party affiliation at the door. Instead, listen with, you ready for this? Self-interest in mind. Look at these issues from the perspective of what's best for your family, your livelihood, your pocketbook. What's best for jobs in your community? What's best for the air your children breathe or that you breathe? These are the interests we all share. I'm aiming to have this show help you understand the energy issues in New York so that you're no longer just nodding in agreements with a political party or politician, but nodding in agreement with what's best for all of us, things that we can all agree upon. And to help put this into perspective, I'm very happy to introduce our guest, an expert in this field. His name is Eric Wood, and he's the Senior Environmental Program Coordinator for the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG for short. Eric, welcome to The Healthy Planet.
Thank you so much, Bob. It's wonderful to be here.
Great. You have any comments on the assessments I've made on this topic regarding the possibility of pollution and energy being one area where we have a chance to actually unite?
Yeah, I do. You mentioned the letter that we sent you that we requested that you sign on, which I'll get to shortly, Bob, and thank you so much for signing on to that. But I want to point out something here. NYPIRG is a nonpartisan political organization, and we're New York's largest consumer and environmental protection agency as a nonpartisan group. And I think you were spot on with saying typically, historically, the energy fight, the climate fight has been very partisan. But as we're seeing here in New York State, neither the Democrats nor the Republicans are paying attention to climate science. We have bipartisan agreement against climate science and public health right now. It is greatly threatening all of the state, and it is because of what you insinuated, misinformation. The fossil fuel industry is not in the business of saving lives. They are not in the business of making people comfortable. The fossil fuel industry has profited over $1.2 trillion in just over 4.5 years. Profits, not revenues. Meanwhile, New Yorkers continue to struggle to pay energy bills, to pay for food, because of skyrocketing fossil fuel prices. This was caught on to, and New York State elected officials began to address this in 2018, 2019, as methane was becoming more and more harmful to our environment. When we talk about fossil fuels, often CO2 is the topic of conversation. However, methane has become much larger of a threat to public health. Methane is horrible for air pollution and for public health. The Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act of 2019, often referred to as the climate law, was passed in order to address a few things: public health, the climate, and energy affordability.
Unfortunately, climate change is discussed less and less day by day, as we're dealing with so many other big countrywide issues recently. But the scientists haven't forgotten about it.
Right now, around the world, thousands of scientific studies have documented changes in air and water temperatures, melting glaciers, diminishing snow cover, shrinking sea ice, rising sea levels, ocean acidification, and increasing atmospheric water vapor. Warming trends and incidences of intense heat waves will contribute to greater localized heat stresses. Heavy rainfall events that exacerbate local flooding will continue to impact food production, natural ecosystems, and water resources. And sea level rise, especially in Long Island and New York City, will increasingly threaten sensitive coastal communities and ecosystems. Additionally, climate-driven impacts are magnified in New York's historically marginalized communities that have been disproportionately affected by and are on the front lines of climate change. Climate change is adversely affecting New York's economic well-being, public health, natural resources, and environment. The severity of climate change and the threat of more severe impacts will be determined by the actions undertaken in New York and other jurisdictions to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, including methane. A fundamental objective of New York's nation-leading climate and energy agenda is to advance the state's contributions to global climate change mitigation. As laid out in the scoping plan, the council's recommendation will reduce greenhouse gas emissions consistent with the interim and long-term directives established in the Climate Act. The scoping plan is one of the most ambitious climate change mitigation plans in the world and distinguishes New York as a climate leader. It identifies actions needed for New York to achieve 70% renewable electricity by 2030, 100% zero emission electricity by 2040, a 40% reduction in statewide greenhouse gas emissions from 1990 levels by 2030, an 85% reduction in statewide greenhouse gas emissions from 1990 levels by 2050, and net zero emissions statewide by 2050. It outlines a variety of regulatory and legal changes, market net mechanisms, and technologies essential to achieving the goals and requirement of the Climate Act. Changes in energy consumption patterns and how consumers relate to and use energy will further enhance New York's ability to achieve these goals and requirements. The various education and outreach initiatives identified in the scoping plan will lay a foundation from which the state can further explore for years to come. The development of the scoping plan included a comprehensive, science-based integration analysis of the benefits and costs of the recommendations that the advisory panels provided during the process. The integration analysis examined several pathways to achieve the greenhouse gas emission limits governed by foundational principles of ensuring reliability of the energy system as fundamental to New York's welfare, safety, and prosperity, and the cost effectiveness of the approaches to achieving the required emissions limits. The integration analysis led to several key findings. Achieving deep decarbonization is feasible by 2050. Achieving the greenhouse gas emission limits requires action in all sectors, especially considering the Climate Act's greenhouse gas emissions accounting, as described in Chapter 4, current emissions. Every sector will see significant transformation over the next decade and beyond, which will require critical investments in New York's economy. Energy efficiency and end-use electrifications are essential parts of any pathway that achieves New York State emission limits. Approximately 1 to 2 million efficient homes must be electrified with heat pumps by 2030. Approximately 3 million zero-emission vehicles, predominantly battery electric, will be needed by 2030. And the cost of inaction exceeds the cost of action by more than $115 billion. So it's not money, it's political will and misinformation that is getting in the way of the climate law. Achieving Climate Act greenhouse gas emission limits will require significant investment accompanied by even greater benefits. The greenhouse gas emission reduction strategies result in improvements in air quality, increased active transportation, and energy efficiency interventions in low and moderate income homes, which generate health benefits. Reducing greenhouse gas emissions also avoids the economic impacts of societal damages caused by climate change.
You're listening to Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We are speaking to Eric Wood, the Senior Environmental Program Coordinator for the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. You can find out more about NYPIRG and their important work at www.nyperg.org. That's NYPIRG, NYPIRG.org. Eric, on top of the health and other environmental benefits you've been mentioning, jobs would also be greatly impacted positively by following this climate law.
It's going to create hundreds of thousands of jobs once properly implemented. In addition to health and avoided economic damages, new jobs driven by Climate Act investments are estimated to outnumber potential displaced jobs by a ratio of 10 to 1 in 2030, with as many as 211,000 jobs expected to be created in growing subsectors by 2030 and 318,000 jobs by 2040.
That's something that I think is entirely lost in the conversation, whether it's local or global, that clean energy and energy efficiency create so many more jobs than the dirty energy. And yet the people promoting dirty energy portray the production of fossil fuels as the job creator. And they use that fear of losing jobs to warn people away from going to that destructive clean energy. But it's simply untrue. The opportunity for jobs lies with the clean energy and energy efficiency.
Yeah, I mean, the fossil fuel industry is investing more and more into robotic employment. The wealthier they get, the more they, rely on machinery to do the work for them. So, yeah, it's absolutely right, Bob.
And then when you think about local clean energy, let's say solar panels or wind farms that are being built offshore of Long Island, who's working at those wind farms? Where are they living? Who's working on your solar panels? Who's installing energy efficiency measures and heat pumps on your house? It's people who live in your neighborhood, people who work around you, people who are adding to the economy locally, not just globally. And yet, where are we getting our oil? Our oil is coming from elsewhere, another state, another country. And that's not putting Long Islanders to work. It's not putting people in your area, unless you live around an oil drilling site or refinery, then it's not really putting a lot of people to work where you live. But it is sending billions of Long Islanders' dollars off of Long Island instead of creating economic activity on Long Island. That's an important point.
Yeah, that's right. Often, fossil fuel industry transports labor, so they have a team of people that move around the country, so the jobs that they tout often are not local. When we're seeing energy industry growing here in New York State with many energy suppliers with providing heat pumps, solar,
Right.
that are local good jobs, and these are growing sectors with proper investment in the state. We're subsidizing this is another topic altogether, and we're subsidizing the state over $1.8 billion in fossil fuel tax expenditures. So they're really hitting us at every corner. And if we were giving the clean energy industry those types of subsidies, that's what we need to see to grow this. That's why we gave the fossil fuel industry these subsidies 5, 6 decades ago, so that they could provide economic good and public well-being. And now they're not doing that anymore. So those subsidies need to go to industries that are.
Exactly. And that's the purpose of subsidies, to promote those things that are beneficial to the American public. And clearly, promoting fossil fuels that are deadly over clean energy that's actually helping us do without all that toxic air pollution, water pollution, etc., that's where the money should be going. And yet, subsidies are always looked at as a real big evil unless they're subsidizing fossil fuels. Oh, we can't subsidize those. It's unfair. We have to let the market choose. And yet, who's being subsidized over the past several decades? It's the dirty energy. But now that we have the technology and it's affordable, doing that really makes no sense. We should be subsidizing what is beneficial to all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why this really impacts New Yorkers and Long Islanders. The big topic across the state and in every community right now is affordability. Disadvantaged communities especially, which we have hundreds of on Long Island, and over 1,000 in the state particularly. But these are the communities that are gonna benefit the best out of proper implementation of the climate law. I just want to touch a little bit on what the climate law does. The
Please,
Long
yeah.
Island Power Authority gives the Long Island Power Authority the option to go renewable by 2030, which will lower electricity rates, right? And often people, like you said, they hear that renewable energy will drive prices up. But solar production, it's cheaper to build out solar energy than it is for gas infrastructure right now. It's something like $1,100 per square foot to build a pipeline when these things often run hundreds of miles. And that's just the cost of transportation. Then you got to think about mining and everything else. So in the past year, the Hochul administration has approved an outrageously expensive gas pipeline project, the Northeast Supply Enhancement Project. Delayed implementation of the All-Electric Buildings Act has failed to keep up with benchmarks of the climate law, and has consented to the continued operation of a fossil fuel Bitcoin mining facility in the Finger Lakes. And the volatility of the fossil fuel market is unpredictable and continues to leave ratepayers guessing and unable to financially plan for the future. For example, in October of 2025, National Fuel stated that their residential customers should expect to see upwards of a 16% increase on their electric bills this winter. And again, the climate law was never implemented. This is because we're relying on fossil fuels, so we need to implement the climate law to lower energy bills. New York needs to invest in clean, safe, predictable, renewable energy, as stated in the climate law. The states that have invested the most in the past 10 years have lower energy prices than New York. It's cheaper to build out solar production than gas facilities. Failure to boost solar production in New York is leading to higher energy prices in New York. And electrifying New York through solar production and battery storage is going to lead to lower energy prices for people on Long Island and in New York City and in disadvantaged communities. And it's also a more response to the climate crisis that we're all suffering from. And battery storage is crucial to a clean and efficient electrical grid. The safety and efficiency of battery technology is increasing in part to the continuation of improving codes, requirements, and regulations around large-scale facilities. So we need to focus on the least expensive ways to generate electricity. Well established that the still not commercially licensed small modular nuclear reactors are the most expensive way to generate electricity.
Right, the most expensive. And yet people see them as like these, oh, coming from heaven, the new nuclear small modular reactors. Incredibly expensive.
And yeah, community solar is the least expensive way. And policies that expand solar use are far more affordable and less dangerous to generate power. Of course, this can only be achieved through expanded reliance on battery storage. And nuclear power is enormously expensive. They built that plant down in Georgia, and ratepayers are suffering right now. Our newest plant in the nation down in Georgia, and like that's their electric bills. They can't even afford to keep this thing propped up. So it's not working
And
currently.
it takes an enormously long time to create one of those plants. Cost overruns, delays in work have been rampant in all the nuclear plants that have been put up in recent decades, which isn't many for a reason.
That's absolutely right, Bob. And also the climate law helps fight utility rate hikes. New York's residential electricity rates are high, however relative to the nation's, but it's been true for years. For example, in 2018, the year before the climate law was signed, New York's residential electricity rates were ranked seventh highest in the nation. 2025, New York was ranked seventh highest in the nation. Right? Still high to be sure, but the impact of the climate law's passage didn't make a meaningful difference. And so the narrative that's being put out there is just hearsay. Like you said, it's massive dollars and repetitive messaging. But moreover, the amount of energy generated by wind and solar is a very small percentage of the electricity generated under the state. How could such a small percentage, under 10%, how could under 10% of our energy substantially drive increases in electricity costs, Bob? It can't. It simply can't. So
And yet the narrative that's being put forth is that the reason New York has high energy prices is because we've tried to go to clean energy. And that's what you're explaining. You're explaining that, hey, we haven't gone to the clean energy yet, so, and it's still a relatively small percentage of the energy we're using. So how could this be raising our costs, which aren't going up actually relative to the whole rest of the country anyway? So the whole argument falls apart. And yet, that's the narrative that's put out. That's the narrative that's paid for.
not the result of the climate law, but
Right.
instead are part of a national trend.
Exactly.
National utilities are scrambling to update the grid, hardening the grid in response to the worsening climate and the resulting heat and storms, and the anticipated increase in energy use due to the expansion of data centers. And New York must do more to protect consumers, not from clean energy, but from energy hogs. Structural changes are needed, ones that protect ratepayers. And unfortunately, the recent veto of legislation to establish a utility consumer advocate undermines such an effort. We urge its approval in 2026. Long Island ratepayers are impacted right now because of failure to implement the climate law, straight up.
Yeah, we're all
And
paying the price.
that was a big part of the climate law, but really, a big driving factor here is it's our public health. We got nothing without our health, Bob. We talk about the climate crisis and we talk about warming oceans and air and this type of stuff, but it's putting a huge detriment on our public health, the failure to implement the climate law. And a big part of that was because I had mentioned earlier was the methane pollution that we continue to see because of the increased reliance on fracked gas. We don't frack gas here in New York State. We did help ban that here at NYPERG, but a lot of our power plant facilities import fracked gas from out of state to convert to electricity for us. And we need to put an end to that process. You know, we need to end new construction of pipelines and power plants. And that was a big part of the climate law is keeping methane emissions expensive enough to make sure polluters don't want anything to do with them anymore. You know, in an effort to reduce CO2 emissions, the country proliferated methane emissions. And while methane doesn't stay in the atmosphere nearly as long as CO2, it is way more powerful of a heat-trapping gas, having global implications, but also it's killing us in our own homes, Bob.
That's
Our
right.
local our lawmakers in 2019 recognized this and passed the climate law, and the governor is proposing to cut back, which we will cover shortly. But methane is disastrous for public health, and it needs to be regulated more securely to protect public health. Methane harms our health by contributing to ground-level ozone and pollution made up of tiny particles that cause our worsened breathing problems, heart disease, cancer, and strokes. Methane is also often released along with other toxic air pollutants that can cause or worsen health issues. Most of methane emissions caused by people today come from the oil and gas industry. Additionally, over 1,000 New Yorkers die prematurely every year due to exposure to pollution from fossil fuel combustion appliances like furnaces in their own homes. The climate law was primarily passed to protect the public from methane in order to avoid cardiovascular disease, asthma, respiratory illness, and premature death linked to methane-driven ozone. It was implemented to avoid asthma incidences and hospitalizations, respiratory illnesses, cardiovascular disease mortality linked to exposure to NOx and PM2.5 co-emitted with methane. It was passed to avoid premature birth, lung cancer, and low birth weight linked to exposure to PM2.5 co-emitted with methane. The climate law was passed to avoid cancer risks linked to exposure to BTEX co-emitted with methane. The climate law was passed to avoid eye and respiratory system irritations, as well as apnea, coma, convulsions, dizziness, headache, weakness, irritability, insomnia, and upset stomach due to overexposure to methane pollution and gas pollution, which also provides relief for overburdened medical complexes, helping drive down healthcare costs. You know, I don't want to cross conversations here, but when we are exposing our communities to this types of pollution, it's going to overburden our medical infrastructure, you know? And then we're talking about medical care for all and having to pay to insure New Yorkers to get more medical access. But the more we poison them, the more healthcare they're going to need and the more it's going to cost. You know, we can save a lot right at the source here, you know? And
Exactly.
not
And
to mention.
Eric, something that's important to point out is that when people are talking about wind power is expensive, or solar power is expensive, or energy efficiency is expensive, and instituting the climate law is expensive, first of all, it's not true. Second of all, they're not even taking into account the fact that 99% of the global population breathes in air that exceeds World Health Organization guidelines in terms of pollution. And potentially about 8, 9, 10 million people die of air pollution every single year. Those costs are not taken into account in figuring what energy source we should move towards. So I mentioned things being nonpartisan and us being able to work together on issues. Well, these forms of pollution, all the things you talked about, don't just impact Republicans or conservatives or liberals or libertarians. It impacts everybody equally, and it does disproportionately impact people who are low income because where do they live? Well, when you're putting a new coal burning plants in, do you put it in the very wealthy neighborhoods, or do you put it into the neighborhoods where they don't have a lot of power and they don't have a lot of money to resist? It's, of course, the latter. So it's in every way, this is something that affects all of us. Now, I'll give you one statistic. It's from the Clean Air Fund. They say air pollution kills about 500 times more people in a year than all natural disasters combined. And yet, when there's a natural disaster, we send planes and truckloads of aid. People come from other states to help the people who are the victims of those disasters. But that's nothing compared to the onslaught of toxic energy and what that's doing to our communities. And yet, a lot of us support that unknowingly because we're exposed to misinformation in order to make some industry very, very, very rich.
Yeah. Yeah, it's refusal to believe, it's convenience, you know, it's tough to think, like, I'm here in my house and this thing is killing me, you know, it's...
In your home itself, natural gas.
Yeah.
You're burning things in your home.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, not to mention as we watch gas infrastructure age, the risk of explosion increases due to leak, faulty, unmonitored pipes going through our communities. And the governor is clearly speaking for the fossil fuel industry when toying with the idea of dismantling the climate law. They're sacrificing our health for their profit, and they won't stop until they have it all. They're not in the business, I mentioned this, of looking out for people. They don't care if we can pay our bills or not. And that is why the climate law is under attack. You know, they just want to get the last of it, you know, and I just want to throw an example out here. It's like people think it's not possible. Nigeria is one of the world's top seven natural gas flaring countries. An estimated 2 million people in Nigeria live less than 4 kilometers away from a natural gas flaring site. Wow. And a study by the World Bank found a relationship in Nigerian communities between flaring and increased number of children with coughs, respiratory illnesses, and fever, as well as being underweight. Nigeria, after finding this out, pledged an elimination of natural gas flaring by 2030. To deliver this target, Nigeria is committed to deploying technologies to capture and utilize the excess gas that would otherwise be flared while rapidly rolling out clean energy. If Nigeria can do it, New York can do it. You know, Germany is making huge progress in moving forward in the climate fight right now. It's not a question of whether it's possible or not. It's a possible of whether our elected officials are going to protect us from the fossil fuel industry and the federal government who is completely sold out to them.
Right. And let's bring that locally, too. When we think about pollution and high energy bills, there are possibilities for each of us. Depending on where you live and how much sun you have on your home. I moved to a home, 11 years ago, that had sun. My previous house had no sun. It was in the middle of a woodsy area. Couldn't get solar panels. So when we moved into this house, it was such a relief. I got the solar panels on. One of the first things we did in our finishing this house, which was incomplete when we purchased it. That was one of the best moves that we made because now we're running entirely on solar energy. We have zero or $15, whatever it is, $18 electricity bill for a large house where we moved into for not just myself and my wife, but my parents were with us at the time. So it was supporting a lot of people. We also made the dive because our heating system was incomplete into geothermal heating and cooling. And so when I say we have a big house, and we have no gas and electric bill. We have a very, very small electricity bill, as I mentioned. And now the solar panels, we had to pay up front, of course, and have a loan. But now we're getting all of this energy for free. We're getting all of this electricity, all this heating and cooling. So this is really wonderful for each of us. So forget about what you used to think about electricity, about what you used to think about, which are American forms of energy. Do it out of self-interest. Which house would you choose? One that has a very, very minimal energy bill and one which you're scraping every month to get enough to pay $500, $600, $700 energy bills with your heating, cooling, or electricity In a month, you could spend that much, depending on how your house is insulated. It's really for our own benefit.
Everyone could have access to this with proper governing,
That's right.
and that's not what's happening right now.
This is Bob DiBenedetto with the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. We're speaking to Eric Wood, the Senior Environmental Program Coordinator for the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. You can find out more about the New York Public Interest Research Group at www.nyPIRG.org. That's NYPIRG.org.
It was great fanfare, last month Governor Hochul unveiled her budget plan. Legislative budget hearings have happened, and there's growing debate over how to finalize, the budget plan. But the governor still has budget cards to play. Under New York State's constitution, the governor has up to 30 days after her budget submission to make changes. That deadline's coming up here in a couple of days. Usually, those changes are technical, like errors in drafting or mistakes in analysis of the fiscal impacts of her plans. Once her amendments are advanced and lawmakers finish hearings, the budget is supposed to be finalized by the end of March. A couple weeks ago, however, there were media reports that the governor is considering making significant policy changes in her budget in the next couple of weeks. We hear often that no policy in the budget unless they want policy in the budget. Specifically, those reports have focused on concerns that the governor will use her 30-day amendments to weaken New York's climate law. Now, while she hasn't released her 30-day amendments yet, we are expecting that, by the end of today, essentially. Those amendments should be out today or Monday. And if the assault on the climate law is not in the amendments, we're expecting a last-minute deal in the budget negotiations approaching April 1st. But, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act was approved in 2019, as I'd mentioned, and was designed to set the state on a path to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by the middle of the century. And the net zero goal is consistent with the standards set by the world's climate scientists, who have warned that in order to avoid the worst consequences of global heating, all nations need to adhere to a net zero goal. New York's climate law set benchmark goals designed to guide policymakers as interim steps to meet the targets advised by the world's climate experts. Those interim goals commit the state to generate 70% of its electricity from power sources and achieve a 40% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 2030, just 4 years from now. So, New York's law is based on the scientific consensus that burning fossil fuels endangers the planet, and that the world must wean itself off of these power sources by the middle of this century. Indeed, failure to do so will cost the state more than complying with the climate law. The increasingly likely failure to meet the law's interim climate goals would be a failure of will, not the target themselves. New York's goals are attainable. I mentioned Germany, for example, with its cloudy days and cool climate, expects to generate nearly 15% of its electricity by solar, while New York State generates a paltry 5%. In addition, the European Union recently reported that it will have reduced greenhouse gas emissions by more than 50% by the year 2030. That goal was set as a midpoint measure to meet the science-based goal of virtually eliminating all greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. If the EU can do it, we can do it here in the United States and here in New York. And, part of the rationale for scaling back the climate law's goals is not wanting to add to the already high costs of electricity in the state. New York's residential electricity rates are high relative to the nation, as we mentioned before. But yet, the well-funded propaganda campaign advanced by opponents of the climate law have had an impact. The Hochul administration is in retreat of the state's climate fighting initiatives. We mentioned all of the policies she wants to roll back, like all electric buildings. And if energy costs are rising everywhere and New York's relative energy cost ranking is unchanged, how can the problem be the state's climate law? All across the nation, energy costs have risen faster than inflation since 2022, with greater increases ahead. The causes include load growth from data centers, increasing electric transmission and distribution infrastructure and maintenance costs, extreme weather caused by the fossil fuel industry, and supply chain disruptions. Not New York's law. New York needs to invest in clean, safe, predictable, renewable energy as stated in the climate law. It's cheaper and less ecologically destructive to build out our solar production than gas facilities. And electrifying New York through solar production and battery storage is going to lead to lower prices. So there's little we can do in the near term about the expenses resulting from upgrading our old electric grid and protecting it from extreme weather and rising heat, products of worsening climate. Bailing out on the climate law will do nothing to significantly change New York's energy costs, but it will make the state complicit in the ongoing climate catastrophe. You know, try explaining this to our kids, our grandkids, that we had the will to do it, but we just let the fossil fuel industry, you know, we were supposed to build this clean energy bridge, and essentially, you know, they just took away the other side, you know, so we're left with a pier, and, you know, the governor wants to keep funding a pier instead of concluding the bridge we need to a clean energy future. You know, we're all going to fall off this thing because of political will and the dominance of the fossil fuel industry in Albany, Bob.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Eric, that I was doing a search on Governor Hochul's environmental policies. And one of the things that came up from a generic internet search, it comes up at the top of the page, said this: based on recent reports, environmentalists and political analysts widely argue that New York Governor Kathy Hochul's position on environmental issues has shifted, with many viewing her earlier tenure as more aligned with progressive climate goals than her current, more moderate or pragmatic approach. The word that I find interesting being used here is pragmatic, because pragmatic implies that it makes sense, that there's some reason for doing this. But
yeah,
the fact
she keeps saying we need to govern in reality when referring to rolling back climate change policy. You know, I mean, the reality is the climate crisis is here. It's killing us. It's killing our neighbors. It's killing our children.
Us.
And the reality is, if we don't address it, it's going to do so at higher and more alarming rates.
Right. So it's not pragmatic.
No.
Despite the
it's
fact
the opposite.
That the industry narrative is to say it's more pragmatic to go with the old energy. No, it's not. But I'll tell you what is more pragmatic, perhaps. Because so many people are misinformed about this and so many people believe what they hear, because I would too if I wasn't privy to having a lot of information come my way about these issues, that they believe that the old form of energy is cheaper. Pragmatic is Governor Hochul acquiescing to what they believe, even if it's not true, because it will get votes in an election year.
Yeah, that's you know, gotta go with the wind, so they say.
Yeah,
you know?
So, yeah,
yeah.
And we've seen a lot of that recently, huh?
Yeah, and people like what they're used to. You know, change is tough, and especially when we're talking with the voting crowd. You know, young people still need to get out in higher numbers to vote. You know, as we get older, we get more set in our ways. So
it's
tough to transition without the government protecting us and just, you know, we think they're making us happy, but you get what I'm saying.
This is Bob DiBenedetto with the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. We've been speaking to Eric Wood, the Senior Environmental Program Coordinator for the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. You can find out more about NYPIRG and their important work at www.nyperg.org. That's www.nyperg.org. Now back to NYPIRG's Eric Wood.
And on top of, like, you know, protecting climate law, we got to push legislation forward that implements policies that continues to, you know, make the fossil fuel industry less, you know, less shiny to us, you know. we don't want it here. So a few things I mentioned: New York subsidizes the fossil fuel industry in tax expenditures over $1.8 billion every year. So NYPIRG, you know, I've been working on this bill with a coalition of people, that wonderful group, that would repeal $350 million of these fossil fuel subsidies to put back in taxpayer community needed pools, to fund things that we need, like public health and education and this type of stuff. There's no reason that the wealthiest industry on earth should be reaping our taxpayer dollars without, essentially, most people don't know this, that we're giving them a couple extra billion dollars
No,
in our taxes, you
no.
know?
And the impact on New York State consumers for taking away some of these subsidies?
So this bill eliminates property and it directly produces, transmits, distributes, transports, or stores fossil fuels from qualifying tangible property for purposes of the investment tax credit and the brownfield redevelopment tax credit, and relates to tax on sales of motor fuel and petroleum products and conforming changes. It's not all of the subsidies that we give the fossil fuel industry. It's the most egregious and outdated ones. This would have really no impact on consumers. So once this is passed, so we feel that this needs to be passed this session, and that's Senate Bill S3606, sponsored by Senator Krueger and Assembly Member Simon. In the Assembly, it's A3675. So both, it's a great bill to support, and making sure that we stop letting the fossil fuel industry dominate us here in New York State. We need to start putting this money back in New Yorkers' pockets and stop letting them take advantage of us. And
I'd like to ask you, though, is there anything else that you'd like to say about what NYPERG is doing? And also, talk about what NYPERG is.
yeah, NYPERG is the state's largest consumer and environmental advocacy organization. We were founded in 1973 out of the civil rights and student rights movements that were happening. And we're a consumer advocacy group that works on good government. We're a nonpartisan group that is primarily focused on protecting all people. You mentioned politics and divisive politics in the beginning of the show, but NYPERG works on policies that protect all people. And I encourage people to get involved actively. You can check out NYPERG.org and see all these great bills we're working on. We're often in the news working on this stuff, NYPIRG. When you get to the website, there's a big yellow donate button right at the top, so feel free to hit that button and fund the great work that we're doing. We're a 501c3 not-for-profit charity, so it is a tax-deductible donation that we can keep doing the great work we do to make sure that New Yorkers have access to affordable health, to higher education, to education, and to clean air and clean water.
That's great. And I'm going to give a personal plug to NYPERG. When we're living our day-to-day lives, our immune system is working and we don't even know it, right? We just go through our day-to-day activities and our body is working to eliminate toxins and take care of business to keep everything in balance. Well, I look at NYPERG as one of those organizations that while a lot of people know about you, most don't. And yet you're serving a very critical function in protecting us. In New York State, on Long Island, and actually globally, because New York State is an important chunk of the world.
Absolutely.
So NYPERG does amazing work, and without you, the world would not be the same. So thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Bob.
Any closing thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with, and also any suggestions other than what you've said about how people can get involved in creating positive change?
Yeah, absolutely. Engage your legislators, call your senators, call your assembly members. They do listen. The more people that call, visit their offices. If you don't know who your state senator or assembly member is, you can easily find that information. Who is my state senator? Who is my state assembly member? Give them a call. Tell them, do not repeal the climate law. Do not let the governor squeeze this into the budget. Protect my public health and make sure that we stand strong and move forward on clean energy progress, and not let the fossil fuel industry win.
Yeah. Okay, good. And there are all kinds of resources out there that will help you to get in touch with your elected officials. We've all got the internet now. It's very useful for that. So look into it. And again, look at NYPIRG.org, NYPIRG.org. And Eric, we're going to bring the show to a close. Thank you so much for being with us. You provided so much information. And I hope that we've gotten through to people so that they understand that the environment and our life support system has nothing to do with partisan politics, and that we can all be on the same page. And as NYPERG is nonpartisan, we can look at this issue from the nonpartisan part of our brain and all work together. So I look forward to speaking to you again, and thank you again for your work.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob. Absolutely. I do the work for everyone. I have friends on both sides of the political spectrum, and I do this to protect them all. So thank you so much.
I love that. Thank you again. This is Bob DiBenedetto with the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. We've been speaking to Eric Wood, the Senior Environmental Program Coordinator for the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPERG. You can find out more about NYPERG and their important work at www.nyperg.org. That's NYPERG, NYPIRG.org. As we close today, I want to zoom out for a moment. We've been talking about New York, but we have to acknowledge that we are in a very difficult moment for the environmental policy in this country overall. We're seeing a systemic attempt at the federal level to dismantle the very foundation of environmental protection. One of the most alarming examples is the current assault on what's known as the endangerment finding. For those of you who don't know, this is the legal bedrock that requires the EPA to regulate greenhouse gases because they endanger public health, which they do. This was based on a massive body of scientific evidence. To attack this is to essentially try to delete the scientific reality that the quality of the air that we breathe matters. And the evidence for climate change's damaging impacts, such as food insecurity, mass migration, and health problems, has grown significantly since the finding was established in 2009. We'll all pay the price for this with dirtier air, higher health costs, increased damages from climate change, and yes, increased climate migration, something that has the potential to destabilize even the strongest of countries. The Environmental Protection Network, a group of former EPA employees, said in a statement, "The Trump EPA is surrendering its responsibility, turning its back on families and communities already facing the highest pollution and health risks, and dismantling decades of science and progress." Joseph Goffman, EPA's top air official during a previous administration, said, I quote, "This move is a fundamental betrayal of EPA's responsibility to protect human health. It is legally indefensible, morally bankrupt, and completely untethered from the scientific record." End quote. Yes, the part of our government whose purpose is to protect human health is spearheading the battle to remove any and all safeguards in favor of enhancing the wealth via short-term profits for polluters with little restriction. Not only is the abandonment of the endangerment finding dangerous for the stability of our planet and the health of our citizens, but it will also potentially make certain U.S. businesses, such as automobile manufacturers, less competitive on the world market, since the incentives to create the most efficient, cutting-edge vehicles will be reduced. I've seen the U.S. lose in that game before in the 1970s. Our cars were big, heavy gas guzzlers, and we lost market share rapidly to Asian companies who seized an opportunity to create a product that was more modern, more efficient, and much more affordable to own. And then there's the strangely, and that's putting it mildly, personal war being waged against wind power. It's no secret that Donald Trump has done everything in his power to stall the wind industry, even trying his best to halt projects that are nearly finished and that employ hundreds of workers. One example of this is very close to home with the halting of the Sunrise Wind Project. It's already about 45% complete, with dozens of turbine foundations installed. Once operational, the project is expected to generate enough renewable energy to power nearly 600,000 New York homes with clean energy. That's well over 500,000 less homes demanding toxic, dangerous energy generation every day, every month, every year. Just imagine those benefits to all Long Islanders. And just imagine when we don't have to worry about what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on with wars, what's going on with OPEC, what's going on with Venezuela and other countries and Russia, because our energy will be homegrown and not subject to price variations that come with the political instability of the day. And if you look into the history of this, it all seems to stem back to a personal grudge from years ago when Donald Trump fought a legal battle to stop a wind farm from being built off the coast of his golf course in Scotland. It's a sobering thought that the energy future of our country and the jobs and clean air that come with it could be sidelined by a decades-old grievance over a view from a golf course. And of course, there's his promise to the oil companies to do something for them if they donated big time to his campaign. And I too would think I was making that up if he didn't say it out loud and in public. But I don't want to leave you with just the weight of those challenges. There's actually some really good news in the midst of this. Despite the rhetoric and the executive orders, our system of checks and balances is working at least some of the time. Time and time again, judges across this country are stepping in and reversing these attempts to kill wind projects and environmental safeguards. They're ruling that you can't simply ignore the law or the science because of a political whim or a personal grudge. The guardrails are sometimes holding, and a federal judge has struck down the Interior Department's order to halt construction on Long Island's Sunrise Wind Project. This marks the fifth court loss for the administration in its effort to stop clean offshore wind projects currently under construction along the East Coast. And that brings us back to what Eric and I were discussing, the New York climate law. Because the federal government is currently abdicating its responsibility to protect our life support system, New York has to lead. We can't afford to be part of the divided states. We need to be the state that proves clean energy is a pathway to unity and that clean energy works for our health, our environment, and our pocketbooks. When we talk about shifting from a paltry 5%, the current solar production in New York State, to the 15% seen in places like Germany, we aren't talking about a liberal or a conservative goal. We're talking about lower utility bills for Long Island families. We're talking about 2,000 fewer New Yorkers dying every year from respiratory illnesses and more. We're talking about a future that is more fulfilling on a deeper, more meaningful level for all of us. So as you go about your week, I'm going to ask you to keep that self-interest in mind. Demands that our leaders follow the law, not because of a political party's ideology, but because your family deserves to breathe clean air and your bank account deserves the stability of renewable energy. Thanks for listening to The Healthy Planet. Remember, your everyday choices and who you vote for has a powerful effect on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world, which is what we all want. And that'll do it for this evening's show. Join us again by tuning in on the second Friday of each month at 6 p.m. The next show will be on Friday, March 13th. When I'm not here, be sure to listen to Natural Alternatives, the lineup including great hosts from Dr. Z to Courtney Bozick, to John Turner, to John Scardina, and more, sharing cutting-edge information on health, our environment, social justice issues, and much more. That's every week, Fridays at 6 p.m. For more info on Healthy Planet, visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org. And to access past shows, like our Facebook page, which is at Healthy Planet USA. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Consider being kind to those around you, including our amazing four or multi-legged friends. And finally, remember to enjoy each moment of existence on this beautiful planet that we all share. Good night.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand?
You hold my hand!
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.